lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope. Yo man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. Thank you all for tuning in. I'm really happy to be back. Alive and well. Hopefully Julian Assange remains the same way. We got an unconfirmed report out today. We covered it on the anti-media, but keep in mind this is an unconfirmed report, so you know we don't know how true it is, but a claim that Clinton had basically talked about killing Julian Assange with a drone. And, you know, I guess this isn't such a far-fetched claim. You know, we've briefly talked about this a while back. We have an article from August 26th over on the Anti-Media by our awesome special guest, or special co-host, who isn't going to be joining us tonight, Jake Anderson, who basically speculated about how the next presidency could, in fact, try to assassinate Julian Assange. And given the fact that it's, you know, very likely going to be Hillary Clinton, it's not super surprising that this kind of report could come out. You know, very well could be true. So, you know, this is the kind of insane thinking that we're dealing with here from our government. You know, kill anybody who doesn't agree with us is kind of the name of the game. And, you know, some people may dismiss it as like, oh, that's kind of extreme, we would never do that. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that we've already been doing that. We kill people extrajudicially all the time, including, a pretty well-known extremist, Anwar al-Awlaki. But less known was his 16-year-old son, who was not a terrorist, was killed in a separate drone strike, a U.S. drone strike in Yemen. You know, and this is one of the things that Obama is going to have to deal with his legacy. You know, he's been, you know, one of the first presidents in recent memory that really has blown up U.S. citizens overseas without trial. And this was a 16-year-old kid. He was not a terrorist. He just happened to have a father who was accused of being a terrorist. Again, his father was a U.S. citizen, never had a trial. So we don't know if he was a terrorist. We just had to take the secretive government's word for it, and they blew him up, you know. And so they've blown up several Americans who they say are terrorists and stuff like that, but they've also taken out other people that weren't terrorists. And so Julian Assange, he's not even a U.S. citizen, you know. As far as I know, he's an Australian. And plenty of politicians have called Julian Assange a terrorist. I know Clinton thinks very lowly of him, so I would not be surprised if she had talked about killing him with the drone. And I wouldn't be surprised if she actually tried to do it if she becomes president, you know. And so very, very strange what's going on with Julian Assange. He was scheduled for tomorrow to have a huge, huge press event where he was going to release some kind of damning information on Hillary Clinton. And then the reports came out earlier today that they were canceling this big press event. And now I've seen another report saying that what they may end up doing is still releasing this information tomorrow, and they're supposed to, but they're not going to have this big event because of the Ecuadorian embassy was having issues guaranteeing the safety and security of Julian Assange. So again, this is just a very unpredictable scenario that's kind of surrounding Julian Assange. And, you know, for those that aren't aware, he's taking asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy over in London. He's worried about being extradited to the United States for political reasons. He is accused of some kind of sexual assault in Sweden, which he denies. And so very just complicated situation. But, you know, Julian Assange, nevertheless, is the head of WikiLeaks, which is a very notorious, I consider them somewhat of a news outlet that leaks, you know, diplomatic cables, sensitive files. They've been now spearheading the Hillary Clinton email scandal. And so they're really showing light, spreading, freeing up information that really is supposed to remain secret. So there's a lot of governments, especially the United States, that aren't very friendly to WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. So also a couple weeks ago, there was a burglar or something. Somebody tried to break into the Ecuadorian embassy where Julian Assange is staying. And it took the cops like 2 hours to show up after they called the cops. And, you know, breaking into an embassy, it's a big deal. Like, that's not – when someone breaks into a when you get a call of someone trying to break into an embassy, especially in a place like London or here in Washington, D.C. or something, that's big. Like, you're immediately trying to get over there to stop that because this is – you know, you don't want your country to be looked upon as a place that's not friendly to ambassadors and to – embassies and stuff like that, you know. And we saw what happened with the U.S. embassy in Benghazi, and, you know, there was in Iran, the Saudi Arabian embassy was attacked recently, and, you know, the embassies in Egypt came under fire during you know, the revolutions over in Egypt. And these are big time you know, news events. So the fact that nobody really came to no police came to show up to find out what was going on at the Ecuadorian embassy just kind of added more fuel to the conspiracy theories about, you know, Assange being on some type of hit list. Joining us now is my longtime co-host DB Schwartz. DB, how you doing tonight, man?
Hey, Nick, just putting the pieces together with what I think Assange is going to drop in about 4 hours and what's going on in Russia as we speak with the largest civil defense drill in human history. 40 million people are going to be moved into underground bunkers for 4 days. And it was done by the lottery. So if anybody here is still asleep, you need to wake up, man. I hate to say it too, Nick, because you're on the coast, man, and so are most of my friends and family. So things could get hot here quick. If what Assange says he's going to release, which is the 33,000 emails she tried to wipe tomorrow, which is going to show her and basically every government agency in the U.S. all the way back to 2001 and before that, complicit with, you know, what everybody's been saying all along, which is the NWO. It's just a getting rid of nations, getting rid of really everything that makes people individuals and putting us into a big hive mind centralized control grid. It's just that simple. The only way to push it through is to make a big war happen, right?
So is that what you think is going to come out here? You know, Julian Assange has been talking about this October surprise, and there's so much hype surrounding this thing. I mean, he's before said he's got enough stuff to get Hillary Clinton indicted. Now, we saw what went on with the whole FBI investigation of the emails, and it almost looks to me, and, you know, we've talked about this on the show, that Clinton is basically immune to any type of prosecution, no matter what comes out of the emails. So, you know, do you think that there's going to be something that big in these emails that would lead to a Clinton prosecution or would actually derail her bid for the presidency? Or are people just so brainwashed at this point that they're just going to brush it off and say, well, do you want Trump to win? I don't give a shit what they find in these, you know, whatever it is, Julian Assange leak, doesn't matter. We just got to stop Trump. You know, I mean, what do you think, you know, is going to come of these leaks?
I think that, Nick, what it's going to do is really take any chance that the American people had to change the trajectory of this country out of their hands and put it into the only hands that can really do something like a coup or a shift in leadership, which would be the military. So I guess the question becomes this. When the 33,000 emails come out and it shows probably back to, I don't know, I guess probably back to LBJ and maybe even a little bit before him, you have this cabal and you have the proof and you have the money trail and you have the murders and you have other world leaders around the world saying this is going on and we're getting ready to basically all attack your country because you've been infiltrated by an organization that was never elected, aka the deep state, and you and we the people we've allowed it to run amok. So whatever happens, man, it's something we could have prevented, but we didn't for whatever reason. Maybe, you know, we're not as strong of a people as we thought, and we're going to have a trial by fire. I hate to say that, man, but every civilization that doesn't self-destruct, eventually the empire expands too far and it gets too weak. I don't know if we're at that point, man. I just saw yesterday they built a $100 million drone factory in Africa. I mean, how many hundreds of thousands of things, robotic things, do we have in our military? Do we even need people anymore? I mean, we're about to find all that out here soon is what it looks like.
Now, DB, I wanted to get your opinion on the most important news of, I don't know, probably this year, but did you hear about Kim Kardashian getting held up in France?
You know, I did. It was real tough, man. It's just one of those things that makes me think, damn, the French, they're just so violent.
all right, there's our comedy section for the evening.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it, man. Just a world-class distraction.
It's just a big-time distraction, exactly. We're going to have a story on that tomorrow, highlighting some really, really big stories, and it may include what's coming out tomorrow with WikiLeaks. We'll see what comes of that. I'm with you. I hope that it's something real big and real damning that could really...
Well, it's not... Here's the thing, Nick. We can wish and hope what we want, but it's not good news for me and you. I mean, if the government comes out that they were complicit in the general, you can connect our government and our military to genocides and war crimes. And then I think we talked about this years ago, Nick, where we said, what's going to be the most logical thing that happens once all of the corruption and all of the crimes come out? You said, man, you know, half the military is brainwashed. They're going to fight each other and it's going to be up to the people to take on the government. I think that's what we're starting to see. We're starting to see private contracting armies going out to Dakota Access Pipeline, going out to various events. They're testing. They're seeing what they can get away with. They're seeing if there'll be an armed response from the populace while the military is fighting itself. I think that's very, very plausible and possible.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. We're going to have to see what happens with these leaks and stuff. You know, who knows what's really going to come out. And it's like I said, it's been hyped up. We're going to take a call right now. I'm going to lay out the ground rules real quick on our calls. If you want to call in, the call-in number to join the radio show and talk to us is 718-717-8296. If you call in, keep your microphone muted. Make sure the radio is not playing. Otherwise, it'll mess up the audio and stuff. Anyway, that being said, if you call in, we'll come to you based on your area code. We got a caller right now from 732 area code. What's up? You're on the Anti-Media Radio. What do you think is going to come out tomorrow from WikiLeaks? All right. We're dropping the...
That's a loaded question, Nick.
Yeah, we're dropping the call. So here's the thing. If you call in... The call-in number isn't to just listen to our show. If you want to listen to the show, go to ucy.tv. /TAMR or theantimedia.org/radio, because the call-in number is for if you want to call and actually talk to us, and you'll be live on the show. So anyway, that out of the way. We're going to figure out what goes on with WikiLeaks, and then Jake's going to be on because he's on top of this WikiLeaks stuff. He's been covering it for the last few months, so he's going to, on Wednesday night, we're going to break down what it is that, whatever it is that comes out from WikiLeaks, we're going to be talking about it. But back to what, something you mentioned, DB, and what's going on with Russia, and this is something that's really just going under the radar. It's been reported by mainstream news outlets, but nobody's really paying much attention to it, and this is a huge, huge issue. As we've kind of harped on this show relentlessly, what's going on with Syria and how Syria is just this big proxy war between the United States and Russia. NATO versus the Eastern Bloc is what it's quickly been turning into. I mean, China is now kind of backing the Syrian government. And the U.S. and basically all of our Western allies are bombing the shit out of Syria right now, under the guise of fighting against ISIS. But underlying that misinformation is actually the intention of toppling the government of Bashar al-Assad in Syria. Anyway, that being said, tensions in between the U.S. and Russia basically reached a new low today. We haven't seen tensions this high since the Cold War. So we're not talking about, they're talking tough and this, that, and the other. I mean, this is serious, serious stuff. We haven't seen anything this bad since the Cold War ended. Basically, the U.S. and Russia severed all talks of coordination in Syria because they can't agree on who they're going to bomb, because Russia is wanting to bomb a bunch of these rebel groups that the U.S. is backing, including Al-Nusra Front, which is like an Al-Qaeda-linked affiliate over there, and Russia's been bombing them. And, the ceasefire fell apart after the United States supposedly accidentally bombed the Syrian government troops, which China and Russia are backing. And even worse, though, besides just the severing of the talks here, Russia went back on a treaty that we've been having since, I think, the year 2000. It said to basically get rid of a lot of this plutonium and a lot of this, like, just nuclear materials that could be used to make nuclear warheads and stuff. And so Putin issued a decree suspending the agreement. And so this basically frees up Russia to continue, stockpiling plutonium. And this to me is something that's really, really big, because this kind of signals that Russia is getting ready to defend itself with nuclear weapons. And that is not a good news at all for anybody in the world, because nuclear fallout is, you can bomb one country with a nuclear weapon, but the fallout spreads all over the place. And if
Nick, sorry to interrupt, man. I just wanted to, before we go on to a different topic, I was researching today, what is the current 2016 state of the art nuclear ICBM? What is it? It's not plutonium or uranium. It's actually cobalt. And I found out that when the explosion hits, it does absolutely minimal structural damage, and instead emits a highly concentrated microwave emission, essentially liquefying anything organic. So in other words, they can drop a bomb on a city, and then they can storm in with troops immediately after, and everything that was alive is dead. And they can take the city over and use the infrastructure. So that's the modern state. I thought for a while they wouldn't do a nuclear exchange, but now I realize it'll be using cobalt ICBMs. It'll just kill a lot of people. And they don't care about that. And it kind of freaked me out a bit when I saw that Russia was having civilians go into bunkers, because I don't think you're protected in bunkers either. Not anymore.
Yeah, and this is just another signaling of the reducing ties between the U.S. and Russia. After the fall of the USSR, there was a lot of optimism that, finally the all that tension from the Cold War was going to be put to rest, and, Russia was going to be able to rebuild as a democratic society. But none of that really, as of the last few years, is all of that's been falling apart, you know, and it all comes back to what's going on in Syria. And, you know, Syria is basically the final chess piece on the board of domination that the United States needs in place for its allies to monopolize the fossil fuel markets to Europe and Russia. If Russia loses the Syrian government, if the Syrian government falls and a Western-friendly government is put in place, Russia basically becomes economically irrelevant on the, you know, geopolitical scene. And so Russia will not allow that to happen. Russia will, and this is maybe what this is about, is just sending a warning, a threat of nuclear war, saying, look, we're not going to surrender Syria. But the United States, for a long time now, and now we remember back in 2013 when there was all that war talk about going and bombing the Syrian government and stuff, and a no-fly zone, and basically regime change over there, same thing we did in Libya. You know, that's what they wanted to do back in 2013, but the U.S. public kind of was just like, no, we're not going to put up with it. And I think a lot of the people in Congress actually, you know, they may be sellouts, they may be neocons, and they may be neoliberals or whatever they are, but they were smart enough to understand, look, we don't want to risk a nuclear war with Russia, because anyone with the true understanding of what's going on over there knows that Russia would never surrender Syria, and that if we did topple that government, it would mean big time war.
Do you know, I equate Syria is like if somebody took out the Panama Canal for us. Like, we couldn't have any West to East Coast economy with anything larger than what trucks could handle. I mean, could you imagine, like, if your economy just got strangle-held with one strategic piece being taken out of place? Russia couldn't even function without Syria. It's where their pipeline goes to Europe. So Europe's 40 to 50% of their economy. I mean, people just need to realize Russia literally would cease to exist as a country if Syria wasn't there.
Exactly. And that's why the stakes are so high. And that's why the Russians are going to fight to the death. I mean, they'll let Syria turn the entire country into rubble before they allow it to be taken over by a Western-friendly government. That's just the way it is. I think Russia is doing horrible things in Syria. I think they're bombing the shit out of Aleppo, and they're killing a bunch of children. Hospitals are being blown up, and it's horrible. It's horrible. But the United States is equally guilty here, if not more, because we've exasperated the.
Well, who's funding and arming the absolute psychos on the ground that the Russians are bombing? I mean, if they don't have our training and our support, then they just go back into the desert.
Exactly. And that's where, you know, the United States is to blame here, is that we've been fostering this kind of Islamic revolution in Syria for a really long time. I mean, this plan dates back not only to before the Arab Spring. I mean, this plan was in place, I believe, by 2006. This plan was in place, and then thanks to WikiLeaks, we got some documents that were from 2009 that talked about how the U.S. was working on regime change over there, and basically they were trying to manufacture a type of organic revolution over there as late as 2009 and perhaps earlier than that, and millions of dollars of U.S. government money was poured in to create propaganda and to create opposition to Assad. And this is just a pattern of the U.S. trying to topple these secular nationalist dictatorships and replace them with, you know, theocratic dictatorships, you know. And so it really is just a change of they're trying to change the ideology around over there and, you know, topple these governments that are unfriendly to the regime of the United States. And they're trying to replace them with these kind of Sunni religious-based governments like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and all those guys that are our allies over there. Even though they're so directly opposed to us, you know, the idea of freedom and religious freedom, women's rights, and, you know, gay rights, and all that stuff that supposedly matters to our democratic politicians. Even though Saudi Arabia is directly opposed to that, I mean, those are the type of governments that we're trying to put in place in places like Syria, and that's what they wanted to do in Iraq. But again, the government's plans tend to backfire often. And so what went on in Iraq, instead of us maintaining a close strategic partner like we have with Saudi Arabia, now the Iraqi government has fallen under the sphere of influence of Iran. You know, and so the entire war over there to topple Saddam Hussein and put in place a U.S.-friendly government, it's kind of backfired, and we wasted, you know, trillions and trillions of dollars, and we've killed millions and millions of Iraqis in the process, and it basically backfired on us, and we haven't accomplished anything that we were hoping to accomplish. And these assholes in Washington, D.C., in these think tanks, and, you know, the Project for a New American Century, all these neocon groups, all these people that are now backing Clinton, they think they're so smart, and they think they can, socially engineer the Middle East and make it into what we want it to be, but it just doesn't work out that way because humans are too unpredictable and things change so rapidly on the ground that we just can't control it.
Ironically, it's led to the hastening of the absolute collapse of Western civilization because what they've created is their own immigrant and refugee crises of people that have nowhere to go but the places that are bombing their own countries. And guess what? They come and they overwhelm, like you're seeing in Europe right now. Europe is never going to go back to what it was. It's just demographically impossible at this point. So you've created your own demise. I mean, this shows again and again. It's like the Roman Empire was destroyed by the people that they killed and oppressed for millennia, which was Germania, which was the barbarian horde. And it happens time and time and time again. And the elites don't care because they'll just move to South America or New Zealand or, I don't know, off planet eventually. So that's where it's at, man. We keep playing stupid games and winning stupid prizes listening to these psychos.
Exactly, dude. And that's the thing is this stuff isn't like it's not like it's unpredictable. It's not like we've never seen this happen before. I mean, this kind of stuff, thanks to the internet and, you know, to a lesser extent, history and the history books and stuff that we're allowed to get access to in school and all that. You know, we learn about all of these shortcomings of all these old empires and stuff and where they messed up and how they went wrong and how, you know, how the Greeks started off as a democracy and it turned into a dictatorship, and how Rome started off as a republic and that turned into a dictatorship. And we see all these historical examples, and you would think that people would read that and they would realize, okay, cool, let's not make those same mistakes again. But unfortunately, these, I don't know, is it human nature? Is it just greed? Is it, I don't know what it is exactly.
It's fear, Nick. It's like we forever have been told that there's only so much of everything to go around and there's a lot of people and they're going to compete for it. And even though technology is going to get better and better, eventually the resource space shrinks and we get to a conflict, which is essentially what they blame on every world war. But it's really not that. It all boils down to the fact that wealth is concentrated, and then the masses of the people that played in a rigged system now have nothing, and they become desperate, and then they fight.
Yeah, dude. And so, you know, we're just repeating history here, you know, and it doesn't matter if it's Trump, it doesn't matter if it's Clinton. None of these people are going to take on the deep state. I mean, this is going to go, inevitably, it's going to continue in this direction. And the more desperate they get, the more desperate measures they're going to take, the more blowback, the more reaction is going to happen. And as you mentioned, man, with the refugee crisis, and I'm really kind of split here on where I stand with the refugee crisis, because on one hand, I think all the xenophobia going around is completely ridiculous. And I think that people not having compassion for these refugees is, like, horrible. On the other hand, there shouldn't be a refugee crisis because there shouldn't be all these wars going on throughout North Africa and the Middle East, you know, for the most part, which is going on over these resources and these fossil fuels.
Did we not do the same thing to the Native Americans here? Did we not have a massive, massive war on our East Coast? And then people said, oh, I want a better life in the prairies and in the forests of the West, and then we slaughtered the people there. I mean, it what goes around comes around, man, and trust me, I take no pleasure in saying that. But, you know, until we change our policy, we don't need to have. There's warfare is at this point just used as depop. That's really all it's there for, because we're post scarcity everywhere in the world. If we spread technology around, what's existing today, solar panels, 3D printing, that's all you need. So you can grow food, make energy, make products. You don't need corporations or middlemen anymore. And that's why they continue to make fake wars. We don't need gas anymore. We don't need oil anymore. We don't need uranium. I mean, all these things are just obsolete, and people keep buying it, man. It's just ridiculous to me.
Yeah, because it's we've got this standard of living, even though it's eroding, that people are willing to believe things that don't make sense in order to protect their standard of living. But the ironic thing is that we keep believing what these assholes are telling us, whether it's, oh, we got to start stoking up these wars with Russia, we got to go topple the Syrian government, pretend like we're fighting for democracy even though we're trying to cut Russia out of the world economic scene, or we got to pass the TPP because it's going to create jobs even though what we're actually trying to do is create a economic great wall around China so that we can contain China. You know, if we keep believing in these ideals, and thankfully, you know, people are starting to realize that maybe these ideas aren't so good. I mean, look at the opposition to the TPP. If anything, I think the people, the non-idiots that are supporting Trump are supporting him probably solely because of his stance on the TPP, and that they think he's going to be good on the manufacturing front and bring back the economy and stuff. I don't, you know, of course that's not actually going to happen or anything, but he talks a good game on that front. And so people actually believe that. And so I think people are, you know, all of these super, I hate to use the word globalist because it's been so played out by Alex Jones, but, you know, people are starting to finally rebel against these globalist political ideas of, you know, just massive wealth aggregation by the extremely rich by exploiting poor labor around the world. And that's what the TPP is all about. And it's also about containing China. You know, and that's why Bernie Sanders also has such a huge support base, because Bernie Sanders was also addressing that issue of this economic equality that has been just created a huge amount of inequality in the you know, industrialized Western countries, that people are just no longer, especially young people, are no longer able to bear that heavy weight of all this massive student debt. We're promised all these great jobs and stuff, and then they finally get out and there's nothing there. Nothing there for you to do. You know,
what I think the TPP is, Nick, is like, it's kind of the final FU of this government, basically the final straw to pull to make a revolt happen. Because I don't think people understand how it's going to affect every facet of life. For instance, here in Minnesota, because of Obamacare's mandatory health care, the system's basically been drained dry, and premiums have gone up 50 to 66% on average for everyone, including me. So guess what? Now with making a decent living up here, I'm not going to have health care because I'm a 1099. So, you know, that's the reality of this country. Now, the good thing is, you know, I'm working on getting a dual citizenship in Canada. I can go across the border with an 8-hour drive. But, I mean, that's not a reality for most people. Most people are stuck on colony America. They have nowhere to go. I mean, Nick, you could get out too, but, like, 99% of the people we know are stuck here, and they're paycheck to paycheck, and they're not going anywhere if anything goes down. And you got to be worried, man. These are our friends and family. So if we don't stop something like TPP happening, where they completely gut our economy top to bottom, I mean, you can imagine anything that can be outsourced will now be done as policy, and it'll come down to just jobs basically by the handful that are going to still be available to Americans. It'll turn us into the third world within a couple of years, as soon as lawsuits start stacking up against the government, draining them as these corporations go offshore. I mean, it's just that simple. And I don't know, man, do we have to wait for the economy to bottom out and there's another depression? Could you imagine a Great Depression with 350 million people in this country and an easily equal amount of guns?
That's one of the things, man, about the TPP, and, you know, the way I see it is it's really just a trade-off for, you know, going back to the deep state and the people that are running the show, the global financial system and stuff. It's a trade-off of saying, look, are we willing to erode the American standard of living for the sake of containing what could soon become the Chinese Empire? You know, and that's really what this is all about, is the TPP, you know, if you look at it, it's a huge trade agreement which amounts to like 40% of the global GDP, which is, you know, 40% of the global economy. You look at all the countries that are involved in it, one of the two major players that are missing from this agreement is China and Russia. You know, and so looking at the countries that are part of the smaller Asian countries that are part of this agreement are people that the U.S. thinks it can count on to be counterbalances to China. And most of these countries are in, you know, in or around the South China Sea. And what they're trying to do is redistribute wealth from the United States working class to these smaller Asian countries' working class, while at the same time depriving China of manufacturing. So what we're trying to do is take our manufacturing out of China and put them into these TPP countries instead. You know,
Vietnam.
Yeah. And at the same time, we're taking away jobs from the people in the United States, giving them the people in Vietnam, people in Malaysia, you know, people in these other countries that have really shady human rights records and stuff like that. And the whole entire thing here is to try to take away and, or at least put a leverage over top of China so that we can tell them what to do. Because if we can just take away China's manufacturing, well, there goes their economy, you know. And so what we're trying to put in place here, and it goes back to what's going on in Syria when we're trying to deal with Russia, is we're trying to place leverages over top of China and Russia as a way to contain them on our whim. You know, so if we take out Syria, we can tell Russia, look, Russia, you play by our rules, or we're going to build a pipeline through Syria, and we're going to cut you out of the European fossil fuel market, and your economy is done. So you have to play by our rules. And on China, with the TPP, we say, look, China, either you play by our rules, or we're taking away your manufacturing. And everybody in the United States and everybody in Russia is going to manufacture in these other countries, and we're not going to come to you anymore. And so this is what they're doing, even though it's a major risk to the American working class. But it kind of goes to show that these people, these higher-ups that are involved in the deep state, their main concern is not the American people. It's not our standard of living. It's not our way of life. It's not our jobs. It's the overall geopolitical global order, the world order. That's basically what they're trying to preserve. I wouldn't say it's a new world order, because they're just trying to preserve the status quo. They want to keep...
It's the ancient world order, Nick, because it's a return to feudalism, neo-feudalism, using technology as opposed to brute force, and not having to cut in as many bullies and brutes to enforce their law. They'll just use robots, and it's pretty soon. So, I mean, that's what we have to look forward to if we don't take things back, take decision-making back. I mean, we have to funnel money away from black ops and towards things to get us, you know, out of this solar system, really, to ensure humanity could survive something that would happen. I mean, either we're going to funnel it internally and have endless war, or funnel it externally and go to a Star Trek type of future, we hope. Because that's really the only two options I see. I mean, what do you think, Nick? What are they going to do? Do a reset with a nuclear war and think everything's going to be all right with the environment?
It just, you know, it just, we can't do it. And, you know, that's the problem right now, is that, you know, that, what's that thing called, the doomsday clock? And it sounds kind of silly, but it's a very serious undertaking by these scientists around the world that calculate a bunch of risks that are going on throughout the world, tensions, wars, and weapons and technologies and stuff like that. I mean, the doomsday clock is like several seconds from, you know, the point of no return. And it's very real. And in fact, who is it? Stephen Hawking recently warned about, you know, how we got to be very, very careful in the next 100 years. Otherwise, there's a chance that humans can wreck the whole planet for everybody, for every animal, for every organism here. We've got the technology right now with, you know, nuclear, chemical, biological weapons. And one of the things Stephen Hawking warned about was genetically modified, weaponized viruses and stuff like that, which are quickly becoming reality as well. you know, we've got the potential to wreck the whole world for everybody for good. And we turn this planet into Mars because we've wrecked the whole thing and it turns into just one giant desert. That could happen really soon. And you're right. We're in a sensitive time frame right now. We're at the point, you know, throughout history, there's been all these empires and stuff, and you know, the Romans and the Persian Empire, the Greek Empire, the Mongolians, the British. All of these empires did horrible things. They killed, you know, millions of people, and they did bad stuff. But the time we're in right now is unique because we've got the technology to destroy the whole world. You know, the Mongolians never could have destroyed the whole world. The British Empire couldn't have destroyed the whole world. The Romans, the Greeks, none of them could have taken over the world and completely wrecked the whole place. That's something that's different right now, because a war between two rivaling factions, whether it's between the U.S. and China or NATO and the Eastern Bloc, which includes Russia and China together, a nuclear war between these two players could really destroy the whole place, and then we're all screwed, and everything is screwed here on Earth, and life as we know it, all the trees and all the plants and everything could be, you know, no more. Sure, there'll probably be a few organisms that survive, and a billion years from now, the Earth may be green again, but for now, it's going to be messed up, you know, and so we're in a time-sensitive spot when it comes to activism and philosophy and, like you said, taking it back. It really needs to happen soon, and I don't think it's going to happen over the next couple weeks. I don't think it's going to happen in the next couple months. But sooner or later, we're going to get to this point of no return. Whether it's just ecological disaster and, you know, destroying the environment, or large scale war, or just, you know, mass pollution, or whatever it is, we're going to get to this point of no return where there's going to be no coming back. And right now,
if you read foreign press, Nick, and I know you do, and a lot of our listeners I'm sure do too, you're starting to see a switch in how the world's perceived us. For instance, after 9/11, we were perceived with such sympathy and empathy, and we were a superpower, but we were for good. And how dare we be attacked by these evil, you know, extremists. 15 years now from then, it's a flip-flop. People understand what it was, what it was used for, what it really was, and how we've used it to try to basically force an endgame scenario. And when a country has a mental illness like we do, from the top down to the bottom, because I've seen multiple social media accounts of people that condone what the government does, what the government thinks, what their policies will be once they take full control. Now, whether or not these are fake accounts or whether or not these are just typical American sheeple, I don't know. But it doesn't bode well for our future, Nick, if we have to fight people on the top and our fellow Americans that are so far gone. They're going to fight to save a system that's absolutely destroying the planet for everyone else. So that's why, for me, I realize this is a nexus now where it's not really what we're going to do anymore, but what's the rest of the world going to do to fix us, to fix our problem? Because our cancer's spreading now. It's going everywhere in the world. And the other superpowers and the other middling powers seem like they're all kind of joining together. And, I mean, if enough people take a giant down at the knees, the giant goes down. It doesn't matter how tough the giant is. And I feel like that same scenario is just building up, man. And everybody here is painfully oblivious. It's Monday Night Football tonight, and nobody understands that tomorrow morning 40 million Russians are going into underground bunkers. They don't do that for nothing.
Wait, tonight's Monday Night Football? What are we doing on the radio right now, dude? Come on.
All I know is the Vikings won, and so everything's good out here. I mean, you know what I mean? Don't worry about it.
All right, guys. We're going to have to end the show here because I got to see this football game. No, I'm just kidding.
It's over already, man. But you know, a $1.1 billion stadium tonight generated about, I don't know, maybe a couple million dollars of revenue for the owners.
Yeah, that's one thing they're trying to get here in San Diego. I mean, it's everyone's
vote no on C. Vote no on. There's other things we need. Get rid of SeaWorld first.
Everyone's talking about it here in San Diego. They're trying to get the taxpayers to finance the stadium for the San Diego Chargers. While the owner gets to sit back and make almost no investment and make all the money from it. Seems like a raw deal for me. Anyway, other news today, bunch of stuff going on. DB, I'm sure you saw that hacked audio about what Hillary Clinton was saying about Bernie Sanders supporters, how she was calling them basement dwellers and baristas and stuff. Man, very...
Very true, very true. But, I mean, if that's the next generation, how does that bode well for our country? And, you know, saying something like that just shows that she doesn't intend for there to be a next generation around to have to worry about as a voter base. I mean, she's committed political suicide pre-election. Do you know what I mean? Like, the voters get letting her in and letting any potential Chelsea kind of situation in, they're all going to be dead very, very soon. And millennials, I mean, younger people, I really just don't see them voting either of the parties again anymore at all. I mean, the Greens going to get a huge push. Libertarian will. Another party will pop up soon. We really need like 5 to 7. We have a lot of diversity of thought and opinion in this country, and we need more representation. I mean, shouldn't we have maybe like 10 times as many reps as we have, given the people
we should.
That we do? I mean,
that's the thing, dude. I mean, I go out and I talk to people, and people in my neighborhood, people that I've been all around the country, I talk to people. People in this country are not just Republicans and Democrats sitting around on their couch watching Fox News and MSNBC. People are not that way, but that's the way the world is presented to us through these elections. You know, it's presented in a world of black and white. It's Republican and Democrat, and if you're not one of those two, well, then there's something wrong with you. And, you know, you're right, man. We need much, much more of a political discussion in this country, this left versus right, Democrat versus Republican bullshit is getting so old. I mean, sometimes I want to just smash my computer over my desk and just throw my hands in the air and say, fuck it, and just leave the country, because it's so frustrating sometimes to see what goes on here. But this, you know, Trump versus Clinton distraction that really takes away from the very diverse political culture in the United States that really exists, but just the mainstream political press and the television news and all that wants to pretend it's not there. Because they know that if other parties gain representation and other political ideologies start taking root, that these guys are screwed and they're going to lose their power. I mean, look at the New York Times. Look what the New York Times just did with publishing Donald Trump's tax returns. Now, these guys broke the law and, you know, they're not going to be prosecuted. They're not going to be prosecuted. Let's just be straightforward with it. These guys are not going to be prosecuted because Hillary Clinton is going to be put into office, and nothing's going to happen. You know, the ruling class, even the media class, as long as they're able to, protect the ruling elite, they're immune.
I was just going to say, it came out that they ended up not paying taxes and actually got a return because they claimed losses for the last decade, because newspapers, even the New York Times, are going out of print because they're irrelevant to the younger generation, because everybody realizes what they are, which is propaganda. So if you're, you know, sitting here listening to this and know somebody that reads the paper, watches the news, or listens to the radio, just let, you know, that's a dinosaur. That's a dying breed of information consumer. The future's all the facets. Even these clickbait sites at least get your mind going in a different direction than the drivel and the total crap propaganda that's being perpetuated every day by these corporate media hacks.
Yeah, dude, great point. I mean, it's a dying breed. The New York Times is a dying breed. So they used the same tactics that Trump used to dodge his taxes, and they're so proud of themselves for doing that, and you know, they broke federal laws and they're not going to be prosecuted, so they don't care. Clinton also used the same tactics on her taxes, albeit to a much lesser extent. I think hers was a little bit under $1 million. But come on, dude, if you're able to...
What did her foundation do, though? Her foundation wrote off $6 billion. Wrote it off, meaning that what they did was they had a PR firm, and they kept paying the firm, and then the firm kept paying them back, and they'd go back and forth with all these dummy businesses that were all offshore, and paying themselves, you know, in a reciprocating manner and paying no taxes at all on $6 billion of charitable donations.
So, you know, another point of hypocrisy on this tax return stuff, and I got to dig into Trump here because, you know, to be honest, in my opinion, Trump is just as crappy as Clinton. I think both of these mainstream candidates are just absolute shit. I think both parties are absolute shit. I think both parties are completely sold out. Sure, there's a couple good politicians within both parties. Bernie Sanders, we can't even count him because he's not even in one of these parties. Bernie Sanders is a damn independent. And he's out here telling people not to vote for third-party candidates. That Bernie Sanders, to me, lost all credibility on that.
Well, remember, though, she just stopped her entire tour with him because he told her fuck off after the basement dweller and deplorable connection came out. And there's going to be some infighting, man. I mean, you can't she's literally offended the entire country. If you look at what she's said privately about things. It you know, Trump is a moron, but she's literally evil incarnate in some of the way she thinks about people. I mean,
she's literally the worst political candidate in the United States probably ever, besides Trump.
What's with the LGBT community supporting her? She's a Goldwater girl. She is as Republican as it gets, and as soon as she gets in, any kind of progress you think is going to happen in SCOTUS – well, it's going to go backwards because she's going to put in conservatives. What kind of a dipshit are you to vote for anybody that goes against your own self-interests? Really, the only candidate that actually supports the LGBT community is Jill. And you just have to look that up, man. It's just the brainwashing is mind-blowing when there's the internet. Stop listening to the radio and watching the news. It's just bullshit.
Yeah, and, you know, Clinton represents the new breed of neoconservatism, really. And so, you know, if people – I've seen so many people, and this argument just makes my head hurt. People – well, I'm voting for Hillary because of the Supreme Court, and she's going to nominate good people for the Supreme Court. Yeah, good people, maybe if you care about gay rights and abortion – that's where it ends, because the people that Clinton aligns herself with, if you look at all these Republican endorsements that she's been touting lately, these guys are neoconservative to the core. They don't give a shit about abortion. They don't give a shit about gay rights. Gay people get married and people can get abortion if they want. They don't care about that. As long as the bombs keep dropping, that's what really matters here, and that's what these guys care about. That's why the entire Republican neoconservative establishment is backing Hillary Clinton. I mean, George H.W. Bush said he was going to vote for Hillary Clinton. I mean, if you want to get neocon, you can't get any worse than that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this kind of shit makes my head hurt. And Trump, Trump is just Trump never is not going to win. Trump never planned on winning. Trump is literally running to make Clinton. He's the only guy that can make Clinton look good. I mean, any dipshit Republican, including Ted Cruz, would have been mopping Hillary Clinton with the floor right now. And Trump, I mean, come on. Today he just said that he hinted at, I mean, his words were taken way out of context, but I read what he said. And he's basically hinting that people with PTSD just weren't cut out for the job. People that were in the military that came back with PTSD just weren't cut out for it.
Is anyone cut out for what they're being asked to do at this point in reality? Honestly, I mean, where are they recruiting from that they get these people that are willing to go into a meat grinder like that for such low pay? I mean, I hate to say it, man, but the recruiting is rough, and it's coming from the rough spots, man. So a lot of the people in the military really don't have any other options, or even worse, sometimes they're going in to get advanced training for their real career when they get done with their 4 years. So, I mean, you just got to look at it like that, man. I mean, where's it all going to end?
Yeah, dude. I mean, it's just – it's horrible. And Trump – you know, Trump I hate to go down the conspiracy theory path and all that, but, you know, Trump's a false flag candidate. He really is.
He's like – okay, think about it like this. He's an actor, right? And he makes hundreds of millions a year from TV. That's basically the main way he makes money now is marketing. So if they came up to him and they're like, hey, Donald, you know, you have a lot of debt from these Russian oligarchs and you can't get any more loans from American banks, but you're really good at making money with marketing. What if we give you the presidential campaign to market Trump? I mean, could you imagine how a guy like him couldn't turn that down? So yeah, of course he's a plant. Of course he is. Now, is he less dangerous, worried to get in than Hillary? Of course, because he'd be lame duck and he couldn't get anything done. And better yet, I don't think he would actually try to make nuclear war with Russia, which I think she's going to try to do. So, I mean, if you value survival, you just hope beyond hope somehow this doofus squeezes it in, gets 4 years, and then he's done, and we actually can take the country back somehow. But if she gets in and continues status quo, I can kind of assure you status quo is not going to be any more proxy wars. I think they've graduated. I think they've set the stage, and I think the world conflict is here.
If today is any signal, like we were talking about earlier with the things going on right now with Russia, you know, the age of the proxy war is coming to an end right now. I mean, we're seeing it happen right now. You know, and I got another story, and you know, this story I was talking about with Russia and the nuclear pact. You can go read that over on our sister site, undergroundreporter.org. We've got some great geopolitical coverage over there. And there's another story, too, with China, talking about how, you know, Japan is playing with fire by conducting joint naval drills with the U.S. in the South China Sea, talking about what's going on with North Korea, and how the U.S. is now conducting naval drills over there. I mean, the stage is being set right now for not only a fight with Russia, but also with China. And, you know, this is the thing that, you know, people continue to forget. We could talk about these geopolitical, you know, chess playing and all this crap all day. But underlying issue here is that there's a mutually assured destruction with nuclear-armed countries. And you've got also the tensions boiling over right now between India and Pakistan, you know. And so we're dealing with a situation in the United States that, or around the world really, that is continuously looking more and more on edge. And what we need right now is a global political movement, a global anti-establishment uprising, where the people, the regular working people, the people that are going to be cannon fodder when these assholes start up the next war, they need to have a real time, you know, a big uprising. And we need to undo all of this empire building, all of this geopolitical positioning, all of this chess playing between these billionaires and these oligarchs that have been running the show for much too long. We need to learn from our history and start saying, you know what, now it's time to start living for us and start, you know, having the working class people represent themselves and govern themselves, and stop letting these oligarchs lead us down the path to inequality and war, because that's all they've done throughout history. It's
Yo, here we go through the stereo.